Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's podcast. I'm your host, Bella Gandhi, and I have for you today your favorite episodes, which is a Smart Dating Academy love story. So I've brought back my friend, Jill Foos, who was a client of Smart Dating Academy, found the lid to her pot, and has now started her own business. Jill, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Bella. Thanks so much for having me here today. It's so great to connect with you.
Amazing. It's so great to have you. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Jill, Jill's not only an awesome person, but she's a national board certified health and wellness coach and the founder of Jill Foos Wellness. So she's doing God's work at helping women look better and feel better at all ages, especially in your 50s and 60s and 70s and probably before, right, Jill?
Absolutely. You know, anyone in midlife is my sweet spot to work with.
Well, awesome. Well, speaking of midlife, why don't you tell us your story? You were kind of born, raised, brought up, got married. Tell us your story up until the day that we met.
Oh, my goodness. Many moons ago, but I was born and raised in Highland Park, which is a suburb of Chicago. And I live in Chicago now. And I was born in a modest Jewish family and had brothers and cousins and a lot of family around me. And I was a horseback rider. So I was a very active person, just a really happy childhood. Lover of food and dogs and horses and just, you know, a lot of fond memories of growing up when neighborhoods were neighborhoods back then, right? When you were out till dinner time and you heard your mom yelling at you from the front door to get home for dinner and, you know, that kind of upbringing. And
Gen X, baby.
Totally, right? And then, so I rode horses for quite a long time and I was a highly, highly competitive. And I stopped riding at 18 and my dad basically said, you can ride horses or you can go to college, but you can't do both. And so, of course, I was ready to move on with my life and go to college. And that was a great phase for me, too, a great learning experience of being on my own and sort of navigating that whole those early 20s. I met my husband, who is my ex-husband now, but I met him when I was 22. And we actually went to the same high school and he was a year younger than me. We did not know each other in high school. Well, I should say I did not know him, but I think he knew who I was. So we kind of laugh about that. And we met and it was, you know, sparks were flying. It was a really quick and intense love affair. And we were super young. We eloped and got married and boom, started to have our kids. And five kids later, we were like, holy mackerel, what have we just done?
Wow. And you had all those kids starting like in your early 20s?
Yeah, I was mid 20s and had them every 2 years, almost on the clock. Wow. So I was either breast pregnant or nursing, but I was like in that mode for 10 solid years.
Oh, good. God, yeah. You're doing God's work.
Yeah, it was hard. It was rough.
Wow. And so then what happened? While you were raising your kid, did you have a career? Like you guys got married young. It was fast. It was furious. And you had a lot of big life changes in this decade.
Yeah. I mean, back then, I did not have a career. I was so young. We met just out of college in Chicago. And I had a lot of hobbies. I had a lot of like adventurous moments prior to meeting him. I was a scuba diving instructor. I was a master diver and lived on the island of St. John and took people out scuba diving every day. Wow. I lived in the Redwood Forest after college for a year and attended film school for a year and wanted to become an underwater documentarian. That was my, I thought I was going to work for Jacques Cousteau and like that was what I wanted to do.
Amazing.
Yeah, but love is strong. And we're both from, like I said, from the same hometown. We were both living in Chicago at the time. And we just decided to go for it and didn't think too much about it. We were babies getting married. And so I never started a career. And my career was raising my five babies. Within raising my kids, I had started numerous careers on my own, started different types of companies, which is eventually how I met you. But no formal type of long-term career for me in terms of going out of the house and doing something. And I was fine with that. I was very good at having babies. I had very easy pregnancies. I was very good at giving birth. I pushed once and they all came flying out. So the whole process to me was really easy. And I know that that's not the story for many, many women, but that was my story. And I really enjoyed being home and I was very creative. I loved cooking. So I created a lot of homemade baby food and then toddler food. And eventually that spawned into creating my line of food, which is how I met you. So I had a company that developed a whole line of top 8 allergen free baking mixes and cookies that I sold into places like Whole Foods and Sprouts and all these other, you know, nationwide grocery stores. And I love the creative side of it. I did not like the business side of it at all, but I was also balancing these five younger kids and this business, and it was really difficult for me. So we had a lot of balls in the air, and we were really, really young, and we didn't really know how to navigate us and our crew of kids and our lives. And I think that what happened was early on in the marriage, I think we both probably realized we were in over our head, and that lust and love that was there in the beginning was really hard to maintain long term. But you know, you didn't hear a lot about divorce back then. No. Right? You didn't, you know, we are from families who didn't get divorced. In our community, you just stuck with it. And that's how we grew up, and those were our role models. And so we stuck with it for, you know, we were together for 25 years, married for 23. Long time.
Long time. Long time. Yeah. And so when do you feel like you first started to realize, I think we might be on different pages?
Year two. Really early on for me.
Yeah. It's interesting when I ask people sometimes, you know, even in the dating world at Smart Dating Academy, and when we review past relationships, it's like, when did you first see the red flags? It's super, like, with time and with wisdom, most people will say the red flags were there pretty early.
Oh, I would say the red flags were there before we even got married. But, you know, when you're so young, it's so easy to say now looking back on it, right? But when you're in it, all you feel is that lust. And we had a lot of sexual energy between the two of us. And that's pretty much what kept us together the entire time. And that brings me to a really interesting point. A lot of women that I've talked to, or men, say that as soon as they realize the marriage wasn't what they wanted or what they needed or what they longed for, the sexual relationship went bad, right? It went south. That wasn't the case for me and my husband. We kept that alive. That we didn't have any problem with that. We had problems with everything else. Communicating, navigating each other's desires in life, outside of the marriage, who was staying home with all the kids and who was getting a break, right? All of those things we could not get right. But we did get the sexual relationship right. And I know that sounds really unusual.
You know what, though? It made it work, right? And that's what drew you together. You had five kids, so you clearly had good energy. And that was, you know, and ultimately, that was the bond that kept you guys in it for 25 years. And those bonds, you're right, it's not typical, because for women, when they start to feel unsafe, unseen, unimportant, the physical attraction starts to diminish, right? So for you, it's great and super, you're right, it's rare, you're a unicorn, that part of it kept going, even though, you know, the wheels were starting to fall off of the other aspects.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's good that it was the glue, because it makes it a lot more fun.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Yeah, I don't regret that part.
No, that sounds great. And so what was the moment? How did you guys, you know, decide to uncouple?
We had talked about it for many, many years, maybe even over the course of 10 to 15 years. We would have talks about it. We went to counseling independently. We went to counseling together. We really did try to utilize resources outside of us to try to keep it together for the family. And some things worked and some things didn't. And there was sort of, you know, a roller coaster of an up, and then there was a down, and then an up, and then a down. But it became very clear to us, it was very cyclical, right? We weren't really moving forward, and the same issues would be coming up all the time. So I couldn't pull the trigger. I could not pull the trigger. I'm a very strong, independent woman, and I could not pull the trigger for myself, even though I knew it was probably the right thing. So I'm very grateful that he pulled the trigger ultimately for us. And when I say for us, in the most genuine way, he told me this was best for us. This was not just about him and his own selfish reasons for wanting to move on, but this was really about us. And you say the word uncoupling, and who is that? Who was that famous couple that used that word uncoupling? It was the woman behind Goop. What's her name? Gwyneth Paltrow.
It's a concept that was created by Catherine Woodward Thomas. But anything Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin touch becomes, you know, part of the cultural lexicon. So, they consciously uncoupled, and to some extent I'm sure it wasn't easy when someone else pulls that trigger at that moment. That it, you know, was that the case? Like, was it hard for you in the beginning?
I knew it was coming. We both knew it was coming, but he ripped the band-aid off for us. And yeah, it was so hard. It was like, we said it out loud and it was happening, and we were making a plan of when we were going to tell the kids. And we had this really big family vacation coming up within like 4 or 5 months of that time period. And we were trying to navigate, okay, well, who's going to be home from school? We had a son that was in school out east, and he'll be home at this time. And then we have a bar mitzvah for this one. So when was the perfect, there's no perfect time. Mm-hmm. And we tried really hard to find the perfect time. Ultimately, after he pulled the band-aid off, we stayed together another 8 months in the house, because we had found that time. We agreed to a time to tell the kids, and we had too many things going on to sort of share this news with everybody. And that was really, really hard too, because you know it's coming, and you're there for 8 more months together, and you're sharing a bedroom, and we still had, you know, an intimate relationship with each other, even though we knew it was coming over, which also made it a little bit more difficult. But that's just who we were, and that's just how it worked for us. It was really hard. I think the kids witnessed a lot of negative energy in the house, and so they, I think, were also ready for it. It was really hard for them, but they also knew it was coming. It's hard news to break to everybody.
And I can imagine the kids sort of knew. I think the kids kind of always know, right? And kids are a lot wiser than we give them credit for sometimes.
They were sad, but they were relieved.
That's a great way to describe it.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, they just wanted us to be happy. And I don't think they really understood what all of that meant at that time. Of course, now they're in their 20s and one's married and, you know, they're all these grown adults. But they don't take those moments for granted. They do really think about them. I think they process them and they're applying them to their life now. And they're in, most of them are in relationships, serious relationships. And we probably showed them more of what not to do, which is fine. That's a lesson in itself. And by the way, my ex-husband and I are very, very close. And it wasn't always that way. It took years for us to get there. He quickly had another woman in his life who I think was brewing while we were married. And I had to face a lot of hard things early on. And that was really hard. And I was very angry. And at the end of the day, I decided I'm going to have a chance at recreating my life and finding my joy and my happiness and my vibe back. I have got to let this go. And I have got to, I don't have to forget, but I can forgive. And it's easier to get along than not get along. And we have an awesome, we are the modern family. We have a great relationship.
Oh, that's so nice. And rare. So kudos to you for doing the work to get there. Like you said, it was hard, you know?
Yeah, it was hard.
He pulls the trigger. Somebody new comes into his life. You've got five kids. That's like a pretty big asteroid hitting your world. And I think now if we flash to you're in the middle of divorced, you and I were both doing television and met in a green room at Fox. I think that was our first encounter with each other. You were talking about your food line and I was talking about dating tips.
Yeah, exactly. I got separated at the end of 2016, where I had already been on the Chicago channels, the news stations for probably 3 years at that point, always doing live food demos, healthy cooking demos. And so when you and I met, it must be somewhere around mid 2017 to 2018. And I was like in the throes of just a horrible, horrible time in my life. It was the darkest time. And I had to somehow get in front of this camera and make it happen. And it was really challenging for me, but I did it.
And you did it, and you were awesome and beautiful and vivacious, and not a soul alive would have known, including me, what you were going through. So you're tough, mama.
Yeah, you know, I tried to do my best in every moment, and some moments looked uglier than others, and some moments looked really beautiful, and it's like our hormones, right? It's just fluctuating up and down and up and down. But you're in it. And I was in it for the long haul. I wanted to recreate myself. I wanted, to do something really special with my life. And I didn't know how to start, where to start, what tools I needed. I just knew I had that vision.
Okay. That's the starting point of everything. Like, I don't want to do that again. I want to do something else. I don't ever want to recreate that. So you called and decided whatever you had heard at Fox, I'm guessing compelled you to call, and we had a conversation and we started working together.
Yeah. So when we were in the green room, I remember you asked me, what was I doing? What about my company? And I asked you in return, what are you doing? What's with your company? And at that point, I had not gone online to date on the apps. I hadn't been set up with anyone. I hadn't met anyone. I hadn't really even thought. Of course, yeah, I probably thought about what is that going to look like for me, because my ex was already like deep in a relationship very, very quickly. Like I said, it was someone, you know, we knew, and it looked really easy, and there was a flow there, and my kids were like, what is going on? I was like, how could this happen? And so there were a lot of feelings going on, but When I met you, it was just sort of, you know, sometimes you just meet people at the right time. It might look like and feel like the wrong time, but it's the right time. And so I thought about, okay, I haven't been dating in 25 years. I have no idea what that looks like. Obviously, I don't want to make the same mistake twice and go for a man who's not going to be, you know, good for me. And I need to recognize red flags. I need to also recognize the red flags in myself, right? It's not just the red flags in the other person. It's what about the red flags in myself? And so I called you and met with you. I forget where we met, but you ran me through this whole questionnaire and just made me feel really relaxed, because I was not that relaxed on the inside. There was a lot of anxiety. I was very nervous.
No, I totally.
And also a little embarrassed, right? Here I am. I'm this age. I was in my mid 40s, and I felt embarrassed that I was now a divorced woman, right? And I know other women have felt this too, right? It's like, I'm a very competitive person, and I was a great athlete. And so I like to win, right? I didn't want to fail. Divorce in that moment was a fail for me. Mm-hmm. I could not figure it out. Now for me, you know, I feel badly that my kids had to go through it. But at the end of the day, we're all happy and this amazing blended modern family. So it all worked out. But back then it felt like a really big fail to me.
That's so hard. And we're so good as women and about shaming ourselves, right? And I'm a failure. I couldn't make this work. And I'm just so glad that you got yourself out of that tunnel. And I remember exactly where we met, and it was you and me and Lindsay, and we were at the Four Seasons back in the day, and we took you through our dating protocol. I remember we talked a lot about exactly what had happened in your relationship. And then we kind of did a little processing about what happened, what we don't want to repeat. And then we got into the nitty gritty, which is, how are we going to reconstitute a partner for the better half of your life at this point? And I remember talking to you and doing our, you know, at this point, pretty well-known /, you know, I would say well-renowned exercise, where we ask you about the people in your life that make you really, really happy. And who are the people that elevate you? And I remember your list was so long, and we dug into exactly why those people made you happy, you know, and contrasted that to the wants in a relationship, right? I want him to be tall. I want him to be successful. I want him to be Jewish. I want him to be all these things, but versus it's what we want in a relationship. But when we really focus on what you need to be happy and looking at those qualities, it's like, this is what you need to focus on beyond the superficial, beyond the quantitative, because you know how to bring great people into your life that elevate you. We call them elevator people, and make you happy. So this person should have the same qualities and then be in a package that you're attracted to and have no red flags.
Right, right. And I remember coming up with a list of the traits that were most desirable from me. And I remember walking into the meeting thinking, yeah, I want tall, dark, handsome, professional. Like, I had this vision of this man in my life that was opposite of what I was married to. And, but at the end of the day, my number one must-have trait, number one on the list, was humor, because I didn't laugh in my marriage. I cried a lot in my marriage. And my dad was really funny, and I love humor. I love the ability for someone to make me laugh. So, and I, you know, I don't think I'm like the funniest person. You know, my friends would probably say, yeah, you're not funny, Jill, but I try. But I like being around funny people. My dearest friends are funny people. One of my brothers is really funny. So I really do like humor. And that became my number one thing. I had to have be with someone who was going to make me laugh.
Oh my gosh. Well, awesome. So yes, funny humor is reflected by two qualities, usually. It's intellect and positivity. Right? Because if somebody can see the humor in a situation, see the humor in themselves, make light of a situation, or find the bright light in it and look at it in an intelligent way, that's a lot of what humor is based in, right? You know, most people, so many people will say funny. I'm like, you're not looking for a stand-up comedian funny, but you're looking at somebody that, who do you, like you said, I didn't laugh in my marriage. And then when you get a good lid to your pot, a good partner who is positive and is an elevator person and helps you to be the best person that you can be, there is laughter just by the natural scope of that.
Right. Not the funny kind of humor where you're making fun of somebody.
Totally.
Right. That I grew up with, that I didn't like, but just the humor that you're talking about. And it does, you're right, it comes with a high intelligence.
It's high intelligence, and it's not grounded in negativity. That's sarcasm. Right. Right? Sarcasm right. is ultimately born out of meanness and negativity, but humor right. and wit are positivity and intelligence.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So you came in. I remember you did your photo shoot. You were spectacular looking, this gorgeous little thing. We do a photo shoot. Now, what happened in your dating life since then?
Wait, I just want to say a few things about the experience of the photo shoot, because I am not someone who wears a lot of makeup and does your nails. Like, I'm not, I didn't grow up that way. I was a total tomboy growing up, and I'm still a bit of a tomboy. I know how to, you know, bring it on when I need to.
You know how to zhuzh.
Exactly. But that photo shoot and looking at those pictures and just the going through the exercise of changing into the different wardrobe that I brought along, and the stylist that you had there, and posing, was really a remarkable experience for me. I really felt like I was reconnecting with the feminine side of myself, which when you're a mom with five kids, my experience was you just get it done. Like, I didn't have time to wake up and like get myself looking good for the day. I didn't have that craft. Some women are amazing at it, but I didn't think like that. And I don't think like that. So I really love the connection I remade for myself during those moments. And that was also not an easy experience for me.
No, it's interesting that you say that. I think that photo shoot, you know, sometimes my married friends tell me, like, I want to do your photo shoot, right? Because there's something about the experience of, like you're saying, reconnecting with yourself and having somebody else see the beauty in you and highlighting those assets and having you wear things that make you look good. And then when you know you're in the hands of professionals, you become more confident immediately in front of the camera. You feel more feminine, right? And there's magic that happens in that day. I can't say enough about it, because it's transformed so many people, which is why, you know, I don't know of another date coach anywhere that includes photos in their coaching packages. We still do it. It's kind of like a gift to every one of our clients. Like, this is, we want you to see how beautiful you are in front of a camera, because every person comes in saying, I'm not photogenic, I don't have a waist, I'm this, I'm that. I'm like, every one of you is beautiful, and we're going to see the beauty and we're going to highlight it. And it's just a really fun experience. And I'm so glad that that did that for you and started that spark back into your soul.
It was part of the process of me recreating my look. Like, for example, when you met me, I had straight hair. And it wasn't until I went into a yoga studio, a hot yoga studio, and I came out and my straight hair looked like this. And somebody turned to me and said, did you have lots of curls? And I said, I kind of knew it was wavy, not really. And they said, you should really, you know, wear your hair curly, try it out. And so I went to a curly hair person and recreated my hair to be curly, which is the natural form of my hair. And so it was just, your photo shoot was just one step of a lot of steps towards recreating not just who I was inside, but also how I presented myself to the world.
I love that. And so tell us about your dating life and then how you met the lid to your pot.
Yeah. So after you, I used the photographs. The whole point of the photo shoot is to use those photographs on your dating profile. And so I did all of that and with all of your help. And I really embraced dating on the apps. I did not want to meet another dad in my community. I had five kids. There were a lot of families that I knew. I wanted to have a great experience, and I totally embraced it. I thought of each time I went on a new date as being an exercise in a muscle that I haven't used in a really long time, right? From walking into a restaurant and not knowing the person and having to say hi and shake their hand or whatever it was. And is everyone looking at you and going, that's an app date or something like that, right? So just dealing with all those little nuanced components, but I loved it. I dated for probably, 18 months. Not a lot, but a handful. I went out and met a handful of men and had an amazing time. I loved meeting new people and I loved talking about myself. I loved asking questions about them. To me, it was all just part of the bigger program, the bigger vision that I wanted to get to. And I knew that you have to go from step A to step B. You can't go from step A to Z. You have to do the little steps in between, which is probably why at that point I became a health coach.
It's like one step, two steps, right. Three steps. And
yeah.
And so you went on a variety of dates. And then what was your last first date?
That was a setup. I had never been set up with anyone before. And it was during COVID. Yes. Yeah, it was during COVID. And it was me and two of my women friends were having dinner at my house. Because back then, of course, you couldn't go anywhere. And we were all single at the time. And they'd been single longer than me. And we were all sort of thinking about who we dated that might be good, didn't work out for me, but might be a good person for this woman here. And so one of them said, oh, I know this man who lives in Chicago, and I think it's worth a shot. I think that you guys would actually get along. I was like, great. I was always up for most anything, right? What's the worst thing that can happen? It doesn't work out. Great. You still had a fun time. I just embraced all of it. And so she got a hold of him, asked him if he would be up for meeting me. And then he called, and it was on Memorial Day that we decided that he would come up from Chicago to Highland Park and we would just go for a walk outside. Because again, it's COVID. It happened to be like super hot out that day. So he showed up and we went for like a 2-hour walk, and it was amazing, right? Because he asked me so many questions about me. He was so engaged with finding out about me, and I'm a really fast walker and he's not as fast of a walker. So he jokes that he was always like 10 feet behind me and tried to scooch up really fast to like hear my answer of a question. So we joke about it. And guess what? He was funny. Like, I was laughing a lot. I mean, we shared stories and stuff, but for the most part, he had that humor that I wanted so badly in my life.
I love that. And then what happened? So you go on this walk.
So we go on this walk, we get back, and I don't think either one of us was like, I think we were both very, very curious. He didn't look like the vision that I had in my head for myself. And I know I didn't look like that vision that he probably had in his head that he'd been used to. And so he called the next day and asked if he could come up again. And we made dinner on my deck. And I took it really slow. Oh, here's another thing I did.
Good.
I hired a therapist for myself before I met him. And I told myself that I was going to work with a therapist to work out these other kinks in my life, and that this therapist was going to stay along for the ride when I met this special person, whenever that was, and that I was going to work on myself at the same time that I was getting to know a new person that I was really curious about. So it was all of that. And it was amazing because I had someone on my side that I could go and talk and debrief. I would debrief my dates with my therapist.
I love
and
that.
Yeah, it was great. It was one of the best decisions I ever made for myself. And so can I say my partner's name? I'd be allowed to say names.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. So you can say everything here.
Okay. So his name is Noah and he has three kids and we met and in my work with my therapist, I decided I'm going to take things very, very slow this time. And I told Noah that. I said, you know, I'm working with a therapist. I've committed to really going slow at something. Cause I'm the type that will, you know, can get sucked in and dive in and get into all that excitement and it still not be a good plan for me. And so he came up and like I said, it's COVID. So we had to just be with each other outside or be creative about our time, going for walks or making dinner on my back deck, having long conversations, not being in bars, not being in restaurants, not being in places where there's a lot of distractions going on. Also, neither one of us were big drinkers, so we didn't have the distraction of that either. And it was just a lot of talking and a lot of listening, but in a really healthy way.
Yeah.
That I wasn't used to in my marriage.
And when you take things slowly, right? And especially COVID forced that to some extent on us, like you're saying, sort of blew up all of these other outlets that we had. We were forced to kind of become a blowback to the 1930s and 40s where it's courtship and you actually get to know each other and cook out and play games together and take walks together where we're not jumping straight into bed, having these hormonal connections immediately, but you're building that true base of emotional connection.
Yeah. And that was very new for me. Very, very new for me. I remember that Lakeshore Drive got shut down for a day or two and he lived right off Lakeshore Drive. So one of our dates was taking a walk on Lakeshore Drive. I mean, went like in the middle of Lakeshore Drive. When can you say you've ever done that? Right. So just being creative about how to spend time together and, you know, it not being this fancy evening or it wasn't about that with us. And it made it really special to get to know each other and go really slow. And he was in agreement. We didn't involve our kids for a really long time, which was also a really smart move. A lot of people tend to do that. And we made sure that it was just the two of us in this space connecting and making sure that we continue to be curious about each other and just keep going with that flow, building that foundation and then layering on another step.
And now it's been 4 years.
4 years. So after about 6 months of dating, I decided to rent out my house in Highland Park and I moved to the city about four blocks from Noah into this beautiful apartment. It was my first apartment for myself since before I met my ex-husband. So I really embraced that part too. I was like, this is, you know, I'm recreating my life. I'm recreating my life surroundings. Some of the people in my life are new. Just everything was so new. And there was just this amazing sense of freedom and beauty and independence, all of it. I got to drive the entire train for myself. If I didn't want to do something, I didn't do it. You know, I was really intentional about my decisions and about where I spent my time and who I spent my time with. So I moved to the city and lived there for a year. Noah and I continued to spend a lot of time together. I have two dogs, so I would bring the dogs over to Noah's. And, you know, at this point, we're spending a lot more weekends together. And after my lease was up in a year, I then moved in with Noah, and we've been living together now 3.5 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And let me ask you this. The number one thing, once people follow our process, as you did so beautifully, right? You found someone that really makes you happy. You dated consciously. You saw that love could come to you in an unexpected package. You took it slowly. You built this emotional connection. He doesn't have red flags. I always say relationships are hard and they're work, but overall, it should feel easy to be together.
Oh yeah, it feels very easy. Of course, you know, we're like a regular couple and there's
for sure
things that we have to talk about, right, and work through. But overall, it's really easy. Delightful. I think that's a really good word. It's just delightful. He's just a delightful human. He has the intelligence and the wit to be funny. And my children adore him. They have their own relationships with him. I have a really nice relationship with his children. Our children all have a nice relationship with each other. They consider each other stepbrothers and sisters. We have, so every holiday season for Hanukkah, we hire a blackjack dealer, professional blackjack dealer or poker dealer. And he comes over and we have this big dinner and then we create this big poker evening for all the kids and their Hanukkah gift is cash and they use it for the game. And it's like this tradition that we've created for our kids that they look forward to these traditions and it's fun and loving. And by the way, my ex-husband and my partner, Noah, get along amazingly well. So we can all be together. So my ex-husband now comes to the holiday dinners and he now has a partner he has a new partner now, which makes it a lot easier. And she's lovely and she's now in the big family unit. And I feel really, really fortunate. I feel really fortunate for my kids because it's a lot easier for them and it's just a lot easier for the adults.
And what a beautiful thing you did for your kids, right? By going through the divorce and doing the work. And I'm sure your kids are really close to you and look up to you. And they saw how much work you put into yourself and investing in a dating program, investing in a therapist, right? Investing in so many things. And look at how you came out the other side. And now you've got a partner that they love. And they've got this whole new family and these new siblings and a dad who's happy, a mom who's happy. I mean, what an amazing ending to, you know, what just 6-7 years ago was a pretty dark time.
Yeah, because I meet both men and women who are divorced who are still, you know, 10 years later, so angry at their ex-spouse. And, you know, we'll never be able to sit at a table. And their kids recognize that their parents are, you know, completely on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of bringing everyone together. And I didn't want that for my family. And at the end of the day, yeah, the divorce sucked and it was really hard and really painful, but it gave me my life back.
I'm so happy for you. So you would tell someone sitting in your situation that hasn't dated in a while, do this for yourself.
100%. I truly believe that there is someone for everybody, but to also embrace the path to get there.
Yeah.
Whatever that path looks like, embrace all of it, embrace the lows, embrace the highs. You know, I health coach for women. I know we're going to talk about that down the road, but a lot of women say, well, what if I make a mistake? I said, there's no mistakes. There's only learning moments. And I truly feel that about myself. I remember sitting and crying on a bench in my bedroom with my mom right after the separation. And I was crying and I said, I'm in my mid 40s. I have 5 kids. Who the heck is going to want me? Like, who is going to want me? Like, I have 5 kids, 2 dogs. Like, I have a huge trunk load of like stuff to bring with me. I don't have an option. They have to come. And, you know, Noah's a really special man because that was a big package.
Yeah. And you're completely worth it. And the right partner will not only partner with you, but will also be a good partner to your kids.
Yes.
Oh, I love this story. And so you found the lid to your pot and you've career pivoted as well. You're a health coach now.
Yeah. Yeah. So after the food company, when I met you during my divorce, I had to let that company go because I was in such a horrible place in my life. I couldn't focus on it anymore. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't want to do it anymore. I just wanted to curl up in a ball and go hide under a rock somewhere. And my partner at the time recognized that. He's an amazing man himself. And we decided to just close up the company. And so during my divorce, right around the time I met you, I decided I need to do something to distract my brain because this is just crazy. I don't have my kids all the time anymore. Some kids are gone to college at this point. So what am I going to do for myself? So my whole life I've been engaged in a healthy lifestyle. And I've always helped people. I'm very resourceful. And I decided I'm going to go back and become a health coach. It's what I do naturally. It's what I have a passion for. I'm just going to make a career out of it so that I can, you know, make money. And this is my career. And it's no longer going to be just a hobby. And what better time than now when I need to pivot my mindset and find my passion again and reconnect with that. So I took 2 or 3 different health coaching programs online. It took me about 2 years to get through. I then studied for my national board exam. I passed that the first time, which is really hard.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. That was back in 2020 when I passed that. And I set up shop and it was COVID. So everything was telehealth, which made it really easy. And I just started engaging with people and learning more about how to run the business side of things and decided what my main focal point was going to be, which is working with midlife women. So women who are going through perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, and beyond, and help them with those lifestyle interventions, help them with that journey of building that healthy foundation, help refer them out to physicians if needed, expose them to another way of thinking about their health and wellness status, another way of thinking about their longevity, how they want to be when they're 70, 80, and 90 years old. So really getting them out of what's going on just today and thinking about what's the total picture of my health.
That's great. That's great. And do you give them nutritional advice and exercise advice, the whole thing with regards to health and wellness?
Right. So a health coach works on those lifestyle interventions. So we work on nutrition, stress management, exercise, creating a sense of community for yourself. We help with sleep hygiene, right? What's a routine to help you with sleep? And in the menopause transition, I mean, I was in perimenopause when I was going through my divorce. And so I remember, you know, that I wasn't in my 20s anymore. I had genetic hair loss and I've been struggling with hair loss for 25 years. And I remember going through perimenopause and it's just triggering my hair to just constantly fall out. And here I am trying to get myself ready for dating and to be, you know, maybe intimate with another person. And I felt horrible about the condition of my hair. I lost like a third of the volume of my hair. And so the things I work on with my female clients is just that, right? How to optimize their overall health equation, right? What genetic predispositions do they have towards maybe different chronic disease states like metabolic dysfunction, like type 2 diabetes, is there a family history of heart disease, anything that they're dealing with, how to optimize the lifestyle component to all of it. So that's what health coaches do. We play a role in sort of connecting the dots between maybe a medical diagnosis or a health vision you might have, and then real life. How do we get from here to there? And how do we make it sustainable? And how do we make it enjoyable? Because at the end of the day, if whatever your health equation is doesn't bring you joy, it means nothing.
No, it's so true. So I'm asking for a friend here.
Uh-huh.
So let's say, you know, nutrition-wise, you know all of the things. You know to eat whole foods and drink a lot of water, and you're really good at that. But then, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock rolls around and your emotional resolve after making 1,000 decisions all day long, you're like, that cookie looks really good. And then that one, that might lead to 2 or 3. Do you have any advice for people in that mode? Like, plan out your food and only eat what you write down. Or I'm always looking for tips and tricks, you know, for my friends and maybe myself as well. Haha.
So I think one really important thing to understand about a health coach is that we are not here to tell our clients what to do. We are trained to use science-backed strategies. So strategies that have been clinically tested that we know are going to work. At the end of the day, we want our clients to have autonomy and agency over the decisions they make. If we know that if I say to you, Bella, listen, at 5 o'clock, this is, I want you to do X, Y, and Z instead of what you're already doing. Well, then you're doing it for me. You're not doing it for you. It hasn't come from you. It hasn't come from this intrinsic motivation for you to make that change because you have a vision and a goal that you want to get to. So we use some very savvy science-backed strategies to help our clients come up with strategies to change their behavior. So we talk about things like, what's your why, right? What have you done before? What brings you joy? Why is it important for you to make this change? So it's very conversational because you're the expert in your own life. I'm the expert in my life. But if somebody tells me to go do something and it's for them, the chances of me utilizing that strategy as a long-term sustainable behavior change drops significantly. So we help our clients create or find and reconnect with that intrinsic motivation, that energy within themselves. Everybody is capable of making these changes. But maybe because based on their past experience, it didn't work. Maybe someone keeps telling them they need to make the change. So that's not going to work. So for someone like in that scenario, we would talk about what have you tried before? What has worked before? What are your ideas around making this change? Because I want the idea to come from you. So yeah, if the client is like, listen, I have no ideas. I really need some strategy. I really need help. Then of course, a health coach is going to come up with, you know, we have one strategy, which I love, is called brainstorming. So you and I would have a brainstorming session. You would take a turn first and come up with an idea about what you could do instead of eating the cookie at 5 o'clock. Then it would be my turn. And we'd come up with maybe like 5 different ideas. And maybe one of those ideas is something like, oh, you know what? I think that I can do that one. And so we set up a goal. We set up a really savvy goal. We call them SMART goals, right? And when people set up goals, usually they don't really think them through. They don't think about these nuanced components. Like if you want to get up early in the morning and get your workout done, what does that mean to you? Do you have to get a water bottle ready? Do you have to set an alarm? Do you need to get your clothes out? Pack your gym bag? Are you working out in your basement? Right? There's a lot of nuanced things people don't think about. But once they do, and they make a commitment to it, they're then able to sustain that behavior change.
Oh, that's so true. It's kind of like know thyself ultimately. And like you said, reconnecting with that motivation because that's internally driven. It can't be externally put into you.
Yeah. You know, the beauty about being a health coach is that we don't have to pretend to be the expert in the room because it's not about that. We want to encourage our clients to become the expert for themselves. It's within them. They're just not tapped into it.
I love that. I love that. And it's the same thing with dating. Once you learn a process,
right?
You can use that process years after you learn the process to find the perfect lid to your pot, right? And so
exactly.
I always tell clients that come through Smart Dating Academy, my job isn't to guarantee you love on my watch, like during your tenure with us, but it's to teach you a process that, you know, when God or the universe ultimately says, okay, Jill, this is going to be your last first date. I don't know when that's going to be, but I know that learning how to do this, you will get there and you'll avoid dumpster fire toxic relationships along the way.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's the same process for health and wellness coaching.
I love that. And do you have any gems that you want to drop on our listeners before we sign off?
Yeah, you asked me in the beginning before we went live, what are three of my top tips for, especially for midlife women? And so here are some tips to think about. One is most women in midlife are not eating enough protein. And protein is really important because as we age, we start to lose that lean muscle mass. We start to gain more fat, especially around our midsection. So eating more protein and optimizing that protein and figuring out what that is something that I have in my toolkit that I shared with my clients. I share it in my social media. So optimizing that protein and how to increase your protein, you know, just a little bit at a time. I'm not telling you to go out and eat like three large chicken breasts in one day and feel sick, right? This is a slow process. Maybe take your most favorite meal. Maybe if you like to wake up and put together a nice breakfast and you're already eating some yogurt with some berries and granola, you could consider adding protein powder. You could consider adding a couple hard-boiled eggs on the side. So just really small steps, but increasing your protein is something that all midlife women should really consider as we age because we need it to protect our lean muscle mass, to protect our bone health, among so many other reasons. Sleep. Prioritize sleep. I don't want to get into drinking alcohol because that's a really personal decision for a lot of people, but I would say that prioritizing your sleep is incredibly important because while we sleep, and I don't mean the sleep after two glasses of red wine that make you feel tired and sleepy. I mean truly deep restorative sleep, right? You're getting that 8 hours of sleep. You have a really positive, well-engineered sleep routine in the evening. And these magical things that happen go on in our cells and in our brain that only happen when we're in this deep restorative sleep. It's sort of like if you live in a big city and you have those trucks come out with the bristles on, the road cleaners, and they're cleaning up the sides. That's what's happening inside your body when you're in deep restorative sleep. So it's really hard to hit a lot of health goals if you have really crappy sleep. So prioritize sleep. And then the third thing I would say is just moving every day. You know, not everybody is going to go to the gym and lift heavy weights. Not everyone's going to commit to doing yoga or Pilates, but moving every day, especially the summertime right now, just getting out for whatever you can do. If it's a 15-minute walk around the block, if it's an hour walk, whatever it is, meet yourself where you're at and then keep moving and growing from there. But moving every day is really important for midlife women.
Jill, this was awesome. Thank you for those tips. And thank you for sharing your inspiring love story with us. If people want to learn more about your coaching, where should we go?
So you can go to jillfooswellness.com. That's my website. And then on there, you'll see all kinds of information. I have a free blog. I have a podcast connected to that, which is also on all the other streaming platforms called The Health Trip Podcast, where I feature conventional and functional medicine doctors. And all we do is talk about midlife women's health. And then I have all my services are on my website. So you can find all the different things that I offer. And I always offer a complimentary 30-minute Zoom consultation to talk about your specific needs.
Oh, Jill, you're awesome. And I'm sure you would be a great health coach to people. And I know that you're very coachable in addition to that. So I think coachable people make great coaches. So thank you so much for being so generous with sharing the real juice of your life. And I think so many listeners can relate to where you were in your marriage and how dark it was. And I hope that, dear listener, if you're sitting there wondering if you're ever going to find the lid to your pot, listen to Jill said, felt like her life shattered, right? And she rebuilt step by step, brick by brick, is in a better place than ever. So I want you to be inspired by Jill's story. And I want you to get psychotically optimistic about your own future right now, because it starts with how you think about it, right? If you focus on, I want you to think today about what does that great future love feel like? How do you want to feel when you're with this person? And I want you to think about that. And I want you to journal about that. And if you have any feedback on that, come to our site and email us. We'd be happy to look at your thoughts about what makes you happy and how you want to feel in your next relationship. So as always, until our next episode, thank you for listening. If you loved this, give it a 5-star rating, write a review. We read every single one and we are so grateful. And thank you so much for making the Smart Dating Academy podcast part of your day. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love, follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.